The story behind the song. The maelstrom of every great conflict between peoples and nations, there have arisen songs, melodies which have sprung from the very root of war, as though to belie the depressing grief, the heavy tragedy waiting the hearts of those who fight the battles and those who are left behind to bear the burdens of home. Strangely, we have been left as a heritage from the American Revolution but one song which has remained to this day. Doubtless there were others, but this one, and this one only, has lived to be sung, to be whistled, to be hummed in our own times. What was its origin? No one has yet been able to ferret out the facts of the actual writing of the melody or words. Like Topsy, they just grew. There are, of course, those among you who have never visited the peaceful, languid, albeit historic, estate once occupied by those two fine figures of early American history, George and Martha Washington. But at least you have seen pictures of Mount Vernon, surrounded by trees and broad expanses of verdant, cultivated countryside, overlooking the beauties of the winding Potomac shoreline. One day, early in the spring of the year 1775, Martha Washington stood watching the approach of two horses.
Ezekiel, take those horses to the stable.
Yes, my boy.
George, wherever have you been? Your breeches are wringing wet.
Yes, Martha, I think I'll change them. I want no more of those head colds.
But where have you been?
If you'll excuse me, Martha.
George?
Oh, the breeches. Yes, well, my dear, I fell in the creek.
Fell in the creek? You, the greatest horseman in Virginia, if not in all the colonies?
Here comes Ezekiel. Ask him the details. I'm so fearful of another head cold, my dear.
Oh, yes, George, of course. Change your breeches at once.
Thank you, Martha.
Ezekiel?
Yes?
Come here.
Yes?
How did Colonel Washington's breeches get wet?
Oh, he fell in
the... Never mind that. That's not the truth, Ezekiel. And I want the truth.
Oh, yes. Well, down by the creek, the colonel found a scalawag that's been poaching his canvasback ducks, ma'am.
Oh.
The colonel told the man to stop, but the man attempted to ride away in a small boat, and all the time pointing a musket at the colonel. And the colonel, ma'am, he jumped off from his horse, and he waded right into the creek after
Never
the...
Never mind, Ezekiel. I'll hear the rest later. Here comes Colonel Washington.
Yeah.
Well, George.
Did you receive the details from Ezekiel?
Oh, George. You've always detested and loathed poachers, haven't you?
Yes, Martha, yes. Poachers of all kinds. Whether for ducks, territory, or monies.
Is the situation becoming more serious?
No, I fear so, my dear. So serious that the deepening rift between England and her colonies must ultimately end in war.
George, no.
I fear it is inevitable. I must attend the session of the Assembly within a fortnight, and I can see no alternative but forcing the issue. Patrick Henry was right. It is liberty or death.
Later, just before a session of the Virginia Assembly, Washington and several of his co-members stand within a small anteroom, awaiting the call to order, when Patrick Henry enters hurriedly.
Well, Mr. Henry, you're worried. What has happened?
Colonel Washington, gentlemen, it has come. War?
Yes, war. What is it? What do you mean?
There's been an engagement between colonists. Just farmers, blacksmiths, and workmen. Between them and British regulars.
Where?
At Concord in Lexington.
Massachusetts again carries the banner of liberty. Come, gentlemen, let us go into session. The time for action has arrived.
Yes, we shall.
The authority vested in me by the people of Virginia, by the divine blessing of the Almighty God, and through the benign dominion of His Sovereign Majesty, George, King of England.
Mr. Speaker!
Does the gentleman from Fairfax County feel he must interrupt the regularly recognized ritual of opening of the assembly?
Mr. Speaker! Gentlemen! I recognize the authority of the people of Virginia. I recognize beyond all else the blessing of the Almighty God. But from this moment, henceforth, I will not recognize the sovereignty of the King of England. Word has but now come to us of the hostile engagement between our brothers in a northern colony and soldiers of the Crown of England. There can be but one question before this assembly. I deem it probable that those here assembled are aware of that question. Does it not appear as clear as the sun in its meridian brightness that there is a regular, systematic plan formed to fix the right and practice of taxation upon us? Is there anything to be expected from petitioning after this? Is not the attack upon the liberty and property of the people of Boston a plain and self-evident proof of what the House of Commons of the Crown of England are aiming at? Ought we not then to put our virtue and fortitude to the severest test? Have we not witnessed unexampled testimony of the most despotic system of tyranny that ever was practiced in a free government? Shall we after this whine and cry for relief when we have already tried it in vain?
No! No!
At this time, when our lordly masters in Great Britain will be satisfied with nothing less than the deprivation of American freedom, something must be done to avert that stroke and maintain the liberty which we have derived from our ancestors. As for myself, I will raise 1,000 men, subsist them at my own expense, and march them to the relief of Boston.
Gentlemen, we're on our way to Philadelphia.
Philadelphia. Continental Congress and what?
Mr. Henry, you know as well as I do, as well as Mr. Edmonton here knows, that our trip to Philadelphia will end in war, rebellion, revolution. Nothing we can do now can avert it.
Except submission.
Submission? Mr. Edmonton, there's not an American alive who will submit.
George.
Oh, Martha, my dear. Farewell. I shall write you by post from Philadelphia.
And may the word be good, George.
I hope so.
I know what you mean, George. Nothing now can avert war. Well, then, let it come. And let all patriots be prepared for the good fight. Goodbye, George. My prayers are with you.
During that historic, epoch-making session of the Continental Congress in Carpenter's Hall, Philadelphia, the patriot John
and
Adams
I ask you,
holds
Mr.
the floor.
Speaker, to look upon the condition of the colonial armies at this moment. Men are coming and going at will. These men of ours, these farmers and mechanics, they are not an army. There are no regular enlistments, no regular uniforms, no regularly appointed and recognized officers. Confusion is everywhere. I say to you, there is but one man who is qualified by past service, by intonation, by a glorious foresight to freedom to take command of our army and so organize a frantic patriotism to coordinated action.
Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Patrick Henry.
If the gentleman from Massachusetts, Mr. John Adams, speaks of solid formation and sound judgment, there is unquestionably the greatest man of our choice upon this floor, Colonel George Washington.
You are leaving the Congress, Colonel Washington?
Oh, Mr. Samuel Adams. No, I'm not leaving. I'm but waiting. My name has been spoken.
Ah, yes, I know. My cousin, John Adams, is recommending you as Commander-in-Chief of the Continental Army. Yes, John Hancock thinks he should be appointed, but he is not the man. We must have a delegate from Virginia appointed to command our army. It's politically important.
politically.
You will command our armies. There's no doubt of that. And, Colonel, as the siege proceeds, you will find that political maneuvers have their place, even in a war of independence.
Colonel, you are the commander-in-chief of the army.
Oh, commander-in-chief. Very well. The task is ours, and we shall win.
The next day, George Washington sat upon his famous stallion underneath the historic elm tree and accepted the command of the Continental Army. Thereupon, accompanied by a brilliant escort headed by General Schuyler and General Lee, he rode on toward the north, cheered at every hand by farmers and their wives. Finally, only 20 miles out from Philadelphia, an exhausted, sweating rider approaches the small company, reins in his horse before Washington.
You bear news?
Aye, sir. Dire news. Who are you, sir?
George Washington, Commander-in-Chief of the Continental Army.
Thank God, sir, we are saved.
What do you mean, man?
Another engagement has occurred between the English and the men of Boston at Bunker Hill.
Did the militia fight?
Fight? Aye, that they did. To the man.
Then the liberties of the country are safe.
Forward to Boston!
Forward to Boston!
Down to camp along with Captain Good, and there we saw the men and boys as thick as hasty food.
Yankee Doodle, keep it off, Yankee Doodle dandy. Find the music and the step, and with the girls be handy.
And there was Captain Washington upon a slapping stallion, for giving orders to his men, I guess there were a million.
Yankee Doodle, keep it off, Yankee Doodle dandy. Find the music and the step, and with the girls be handy.
There I see a little keg with head made of leather. They played upon it with the sticks and called it folks together.
Yankee Doodle, keep it off, Yankee Doodle dandy. Mind the music and the step and with the girls be handy. Yankee Doodle, keep it off, Yankee Doodle dandy. Mind the music and the step and with the girls be handy.